Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. And when he's not busy actually building, fixing something, or sharing best practices with others, he is scrolling, clicking, and sharing online while he looks for new ideas. So we're going to start talking today about getting DIY ideas from social media, YouTube, and other sites on the internet, what to look for and what to avoid. And of course, a little later on, Bill will also answer your questions about the home improvement projects on your to-do list. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Charity.
So I only recently learned about your Pinterest addiction, I think is how
it is.
We might describe it.
No, I feel comfortable saying yes, I'm addicted to it.
All right. And for people who don't know Pinterest, it is a social media site, and it's dedicated to sharing links to blogs or videos or, you know, just other places where there's information online.
Exactly. And you know, I think it has kind of maybe a reputation for when it first came out that everybody, and me included, thought, okay, this is for decorating and looking paint colors. And,
right. Party planning ideas.
Yeah.
Or maybe I want a new haircut. I'd like to see what's out there.
Well, oh, yeah, that's me. All right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You might want to actually check those out. But
hey, my horse trimmers, I can start from them every 6 months, so don't give me any grief.
All right. So how did you get hooked on it?
Well, you know, I do not like social media. My kids put me on Facebook, and I still don't know how to. I forgot my password. I never do anything on it. I don't tweet or any of that stuff. I've reverted back to a flip phone, which was bad move in my case. But anyway, somehow one of my kids said, well, check this on Pinterest. And I go, no, because I had been looking at house all the time. That's how I pronounce it, house, you know. And there's all kinds of ideas, but it seemed like they always wanted to sell you something. Mm-hmm. They always had this little price tag hanging off, and then it was 3 times more than what you'd pay at a local store. But said, check on Pinterest. I got on there, and I couldn't get off because I would just search, like, say, I was surprised. I said, moisture in attics. I would just just throw that out. And all of a sudden, I've got all these pins, you know, these little articles and videos from all over the world, not just, you know, some stuff here in the Midwest, but all over the world of different methods and research that a lot of times I would have to go to a specific site to look for something. Because a neat thing on Pinterest is I get hooked up on these ones that I'm really stuck in, the ones from New Zealand and Australia and Germany. I don't know why. And then Great Britain, you know, and Canada, and I'll look at some in the United States. But I like to look at some of the stuff that a lot of times they're really cutting edge.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of research behind a lot of them. As long as you know that, you know, that it's not just some product sponsoring it. Like a lot of times the United States sites, it seems like when you get down the bottom, it was a really good article about, say, a type of insulation. Then you get down the bottom, well, yeah, it was the manufacturer that put it out. So a lot, these are more, seems like more third party.
Okay.
And then when you get tired, then I'll just go to like minion memes, you know, the little minions from the cartoon characters. And all of a sudden I am just dying laughing. And I'll just scroll through those, and then I'll take a little break and go to German Shepherds, you know. But then I go back to building. And a lot of the things, which is cool about it, you start to understand the metric measurement, because you have to, because a lot of the dimensions are in metric. And then I'm stuck in these ones from Eastern Europe that, you know, to me it looks like just chicken scratch. You know, I don't understand the written language, but I can understand what it is.
Right, what they're actually trying to communicate. Well, and that's interesting. I can imagine, you know, here in the United States, we have so much space. And in many countries elsewhere in the world, space is at a real premium. So that drives innovation, doesn't it?
It really does. And especially the ones in Great Britain and Scotland and Ireland and Wales, they went in their communities, they have really small, you know, space to work with. And it's amazing when you go to these other places, they'll call them self-builds. And basically, the homeowner, you know, is the contractor, and it tells you it. There's all kinds of things on how to deal with contractors, you know, how to purchase materials, what to look for. And a lot of times, it's a lot better than what I can find here in the United States, because it's usually driven by a company. And over there, some are, but a lot of them aren't. And it, I mean, like in some of the countries, just like 70% are self-builds. And what's really funny is they'll say it's timber framed, and I'm thinking huge timbers when it's just wood framed. But they really look at what I like about a lot of the designs, like in New Zealand as well, is the landscaping is way down. You know, it's like when you watch a British movie or something. They have gravel driveways, and they have, we Iowans would call it unkempt lawns, you know, because it looks like weeds, but it's just taller grass. But more of a natural area, and there's more of large walkout walls of glass to a small area where people and the family can congregate. But the building kind of wraps around it, kind of like an atrium of some sorts. But they seem a lot more homey. You know, but then they'll go to the real, you know, out this way. But even, you know, building a little place up in northern Minnesota, and I found what I wanted in New Zealand. And it's just the simplest shed-style roof. And in northern Minnesota, they have wildfires. And so your insurance, you know, of course, reflects that. And here they just took corrugated metal like you would see on an old barn, except it doesn't have any galvanizing on it. They just take the bare steel. And then you let it rust. And so then you have a fireproof exterior.
That looks kind of cool.
And it looks real cool. And what was really funny is my father-in-law is a farmer, and I ran that by him. And I thought, oh, boy, this is going to be great. He's just going to slap me silly. You know, what? Who would put barn steel on a new house? And he goes, hey, that looks pretty cool. Oh, man, there's my stamp of approval.
So, all right, but you've got individuals who are sharing their experiences and their ideas. And not – don't stop me if you've heard this before. Not all advice that you get on the internet is good advice.
No, it isn't.
Do you protect yourself from the duds out there?
Well, you know, I really like there's some places that I really like to go to, especially when they show like different types of methods. There's an app, and I've talked about it before, called Construction Instructions. It's a free app out basically for some guys from a company called Building Knowledge. And it, in animations, it shows you how to put things together, and it recommends products. And of course, you know, people sponsor some of these things, but it shows you how to do it correctly. And when we try to show people, sometimes, you know, if I'm going out to say someone, you know, doing a little bit of consulting or something, and I will pull up, I said, take a look at Inspectopedia. And all it is building inspectors airing their frustrations and showing pictures galore of what some boneheads are doing out there, and then seeing things that products and methods that we see highlighted on building projects as being, boy, this is just, you know, sliced bread. And then they're showing, okay, this is what it looks like when you don't do it right. And it's a perfectly good product, beautiful product, but somebody, again, didn't read the directions. Inspectopedia is really good. In Iowa, I really like using the Iowa Green Streets criteria from the Iowa Department of Economic Development. That was based on Enterprise Green Communities that came up with a national program where they've sponsored millions of construction sites. But basically, when you get down, especially in the residential, it shows how things should be put together. And what Jeff Geertz basically handles that program, he has put an unlimited, basically, number of sites to go to help you with, let's say, if it's on insulating a building in Iowa. And then he'll put all these different websites to go to that reinforces why you should be building this way. Another, like one that's completely unbiased whatsoever is the USDA's Forest Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin. I mentioned it before. But go to that site if you really like doing research and you want to prove a point to someone. You know, sometimes I'll get frustrated with somebody and an old codger my age, and they don't want to change. And I'll say, okay, here's the research behind why we're doing this and why we need to change. Can't be doing it the same way. you know, I just looked at one last night. They got all these different articles and videos on how to build a wooden tornado shelter. Just came out, I think, on the 5th of April for around $3,000 to $4,000. Build it inside your house. Okay, well, how'd they test it? Well, they threw an 8-foot 2x4, basically 15 pounds at 100 mile an hour out of their cannon, and I've seen that cannon. It is really cool. And they blow it at this wall to prove the impact strength. And here, so if somebody wants to build their own that actually meets the standards put out you know, by the federal government on storm shelters, they can find that. And it's just right up the road.
So if you really want to do a project, follow up with the research.
You've got to do the research, yeah. And you know, if you're looking at just basic building science, just go to buildingscience.com. It's the easiest thing there is. And
I have to ask you one more word of warning. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So not all of us have the kind of building skills that you have amassed in a lifetime.
Haven't made that many mistakes
of doing
yet. That's
this
all.
Work.
Yeah.
Right. And when I watch a video on how to do something, it often looks very simple.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't really have the skills to pull that off. So is there just a word of warning to remember that just because you've watched a video, you don't necessarily know how to do something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because I watch mechanical videos and I'm no mechanic. I mean, when I was young, I changed the transmission fluid thinking it was the oil in the engine. I mean, that's how dumb as a box of rocks I am. And so, you know, just because you watch it doesn't make me a mechanic. It's the same thing. You have certain skill sets. So then you search for someone, you know, an in-law or a friend that is mechanically inclined. And can kind of see through that, because, like you said, when you look at YouTube, you can kind of see where they've, okay, stopped and restarted,
right?
Because they really goofed. I watched Bob Vila do it one time a long time ago on this old house where he was drilling a hole in a shower stall, and he drilled it wrong, and I knew he did when I saw him drill it. And then they came back after commercial, and magically that hole was in a different spot. So even, you know, even guys with a lot of experience goof up,
and a big budget.
But yeah, you have to really do some reflection. Am I capable of it? And if I do get halfway through and I realize maybe I shouldn't have done this, you know, who are you going to call for backup?
All right.
Right.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and he's here to answer your questions about any of the home improvement projects on your list. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We've been talking about getting ideas from social media or online. He's a little bit of a Pinterest addict. And if you'd like to join our conversation about that or about any of the home improvement projects in your life, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a question from Ed in Iowa City. He says, I guess this old guy needs help navigating Pinterest. I keep trying to use it for home projects, but too often end up with non-active websites, foreign language websites, or other confusing info. Any suggestions?
Just keep popping at this the same. You know, when I get a topic that's, let's say, in English, and then I'll just keep going down that same one. But I know exactly what it's saying. All of a sudden, it just kind of throws you off on another thread. You have to keep backing up. And then
just keep clicking.
Just
huh?
keep clicking, yeah. But you know, there's always the minion memes. I mean, there's nothing better for your day than those.
Good advice. Tony's on the line in Central City. Hi, Tony.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
I got a story I like to share. I was putting up a header board over my deck one time here, actually not that long ago. And my wife suggested Pinterest, so I went in and found some ideas. I'd never done one. And the first thing that popped up in there for the header board, they were talking about how easy it was and how you could take a piece of siding. And because I have wood siding, and they said, just flip the siding over, and that'll give you a level space. and then lag bolted on. And I was like, okay, that sounds easy. And I'm sure Bill right now is cringing.
I am.
So I was about to do this, and before I go get supplies and whatnot, I'm going to read the comments. Go down to the comments. That's what I suggest to a lot of people. Go read the comments on these articles.
You're right.
There were contractors nonstop going, don't do this. Cut a hole in your siding. Bolt to your 4x2.
Yeah.
I was just so glad that I went back and read the comments.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is really big. You've got to look at those comments. And that's why whenever I find these sites, I always research basically the technique that they're talking about. And, you know, like when you're talking about putting these headers in, there's so many ways to do it. And I've gone back and looked at some old do-it-yourself network stuff. And holy smokes, you know, basically what Tony's saying, you know, there's no way this is going to work. You know, I wish I'd have been there 20 minutes later and watched them, you know, pick themselves up off the floor. You're right. And that's why, you know, especially when it has to do with loads or weight or, you know, pinch points, you know, getting your fingers stuck, you know, behind a board and you're bolted it up and you drop your screwdriver and you can't get your fingers out. All those kind of things you really have to research on. I'm glad you mentioned the comments.
All right. So check the comments. Yeah. Make sure you're not getting yourself into terrible trouble. All right. Teddy is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Teddy.
Hold on. Hi. My basement was leaking when all that rain came in last summer, and then again when all the snow melted this spring. But last summer, it was even coming up through a crack I hadn't noticed on the basement floor until I saw water coming up through it. And 20 years ago, my mom had her basement done, and they went outside and dug. I wasn't there, but they dug up a bunch of stuff on the outside and inside as well. And I had somebody come over. I was looking at those videos. And they say, no, 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 you can just have us put troughs on the inside of your house and drain it in your sump pump. And I don't know. And do I need a backup battery for my sump pump?
Can you get backup batteries, you say?
Should I get one?
Yeah. If you've got a lot of water, yeah. I mean, you've got a real high water table and something's not working. If you can still see it come up on a crack in the floor, and if the sump pump's working, I have a family member, I think he's got 3 sump pumps in his basement now, because when they built the house, they put the basement floor on clay. And so where they had the original sump pump, it was just taking the water in that general area, but it wasn't doing it anywhere else. And I remember when we put another one in underneath his stairs, holy smokes, it was like 20 garden hoses going. And so the thing is, if you put that trough system in around, you know, inside the perimeter of your basement, it may not do anything to help where the water's coming out of the crack. It depends on the age of the house and what the slab is sitting on. That's why on new homes, by code, it's required that they put clean, free-draining gravel underneath your basement floor now, you know, to eliminate issues like what you have. That's one good step, is to try that from the inside. But one thing I do caution about is, depending on the soil and the type of basement and age and all kinds of different issues, is when they put that trough in, there are cases where they'll go ahead and cut the concrete out, like a whole wall, like 40-foot wall. They'll cut that out, lift it, and then all of a sudden the soil on the outside is so heavy and saturated with water that it just pushes the basement wall and the footing and everything inward, because there's no floor to hold it. And so, you know, a competent contractor, that style of contractor, may just do sections at a time, like maybe 6 foot, and then leave part of the floor, do 6 foot, leave part of the floor, and then and then come back later and redo it. So there are some issues with that, but if it's coming out of the floor, you may have more issues than just trying to catch it around the perimeter. And I hate to say that, but that's always scary, is when it comes up right out of a crack like that. So it means it's just, you may have just a wet spot wherever that crack is, and it'll never get to the sump pump or get to that trough. You might put thousands of dollars and then still have the moisture. And that's the bad thing about Iowa. You know, we can't just catch it on the outside or catch it on the inside and the outside, but it may be coming right up through the middle. So that's why it's important, you know. What's that?
It's an 80-year-old house, and it was just a hairline crack, and it just was moist. It wasn't water coming up, squirting up out through this crowd.
Yeah, that, you know, it's still, but you know, you can still tell there's some pressure there. But if, it, but it's still, it may, you know, there may be some sand underneath that, and it may go to that trough. But you know, I'd get at least three bids, three estimates, and different types of methods, and really check their history, you know, with a better, better bureaus, better business, and you know, check with a local building inspector and see if he's had any issues with a particular company, because you know that's a huge investment a lot of times.
All right, yeah,
really big investment.
Teddy, sorry about that. Thanks so much for your call. Matt is on the line next in Mount Vernon. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I often find projects online for house jobs, you know, for things to do at home to fix. But I don't, like you said earlier, I don't have like that kind of skill set. So when I go to find someone, you know, like a, you know, like a handyman or whatever, there are websites that rate them that say, you know, here's a good list of names of people that I've used, and but they often don't have an Iowa sort of tab,
right,
or a local list. And I'm wondering if there's any websites that I can find actually local people to help me with jobs like that, and you know, have them rated by different people that have used them, et cetera.
I've always been awful leery of rating systems that are online. It's like reading a comment or an editorial by Anonymous. I have absolutely no credibility when it says Anonymous or they don't put their name, or you know, those, or you know, you could almost basically pay to have your name highly rated, or have all your friends, you know, hey, you know,
right.
You could have 50 friends call in, all of a sudden you're number one. The best thing to do is go to, like, say, a local lumberyard, or the building, local building inspector, or realtors, and they usually have a person that they'll recommend. And a lot of the realtors invest in rentals. And so then they, a lot of times, maybe they won't give you the name because they have some really good contractors. But that's usually, go that route. And, you know, that's one area where I really want to stay away from is where they rate someone. Because that can be so manipulated by the number of people. There's a company up in Minnesota that I think is just great. And I checked one time on comments and reviews, and they've only had one. But that's the only person anybody in the area goes to, so nobody checks.
Right, right.
Because they're the best.
All right, so realtors, know, building inspectors, the lumberyard. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, check with them because, you know, they kind of have, especially a lumberyard, they have a vested interest in giving you the good person, whereas some list that you get off the internet, what are they going to lose, you know?
Right.
But the lumberyard, they tell you a person, you know, that doesn't do a good job, won't complete, won't show up, charges too much, something like that. They know you're going to get mad at the person that recommended them, and so no, they want to tell you who the best one is.
Well, and a lot of contractors work with each other. So let's say you have an electrician you trust, mm-hmm. ask them. I mean, is that a good idea? Because they'll know who they like to work with,
right,
and who they can trust.
Right. You know, when I was building, it seemed like I always used the same contractors because they knew what I wanted, and I could always trust them. And when you find somebody you can trust, you don't ever want to let go of them, and you'll pay a premium to keep them.
And contractors gossip. I mean, they know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, they know. You bet they do. Yeah.
All right, Matt, thanks a lot for your call, and good luck finding the help that you need. Here's a question from Laura. I need to re-roof my 1920s bungalow, and I'm wondering about best color choices for energy efficiency in Iowa. The house is painted pale green with white trim. I'm also torn between metal roofing and regular shingles. Any advice?
Well, you know, you've got, if it's a bungalow, it makes it a little tougher because a bungalow has so much character. And when you look at energy efficiency, it was always kind of funny to me when people would say, okay, I want a light colored roof that'll help on my cooling load in the summer. Well, yeah, it'll cool the attic down a little bit. But then a lot of subdivisions won't let you put a light, real light white colored roof on anymore. It has to be more of a wood tone or a darker color. So you know, you're probably not in an area like that. But I always kind of go back to researching the original bungalows, what color schemes that they had, and go with that. And you know, usually they were a darker or a red, you know, roof, maybe a red tile or a slate roof or sometimes a concrete tile. But if you're looking at long term, I really like, and, you know, some people have mentioned it to me before to not say it so much, but I really like the steel roofing because of its longevity and it holds up well to hail. But the, like in a bungalow, I think the a steel roof that, you know, looks they look like the shingles. That they, you know, have a really good heavy-duty shingle look, but the particulate is, you know, is basically adhered so well to the metal underneath that, you know, it's not coming off. It's a 50-year transferable warranty with most companies, and I think they're really light on that 50 years. I don't know why it wouldn't last 100 if it's put on right. The only issue is sometimes on a bungalow, the pitch is very shallow, and so they recommend that most bungalows are a 4-12, which means every foot that you go horizontally, that the roof comes up 4 inches. So that's that angle. You're okay there. But if you go less than that, then there's some extra little water sealing details that sometimes need to be done depending on the brand of metal. But I think that's a really good look for a bungalow. I personally like the darker colors.
And let's unpack that a little bit because, you know, a lot of people, when thinking about conservation, they're going with lighter colors mm-hmm. because it absorbs less heat.
Yes.
But why do you like the darker colors?
Well, I like the color and it's just there. Yeah, there you go. Again, I like the look of it. I think the house looks better. Me personally mm-hmm. with a darker color. And if the house is, if the house is insulated correctly, you know, they'll say, well, use a dark color so the roof deck gets warm in the winter from the sun and melts the snow off. And says, well, if it's insulated right, the snow's not going to melt. But, yeah, if you're looking at really energy efficiency, you'll want to go with the lighter colors. But, you know, we try to make the houses efficient enough where it's not going to really matter, that mm-hmm. attic temperature.
Well, and it's also, right. I mean, we've talked about this before, and as you've pointed out, you know, if you have trouble heating your house, maybe you want something that absorbs more heat. If it's trouble cooling your house, maybe you want a lighter color.
That's exactly right.
And it's pretty cold here a lot of the time.
It is. And that's why a lot of people that I know, they'll go with a darker color because we're a heating season.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll absorb basically. And back in the old solar days, you know, we always thought that black was the ultimate color. But when you really go back and look at, you know, the data, like Ed Masria had the passive solar handbook. It's like twice as thick as the Gulag Archipelago. And that was always dark green. Dark green was, you'll get arguments on that, but they said actually dark green was a better solar collector.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you get slap silly if you bring that up a bunch of solar people, but if you really look at that research, so, you know, but a real dark color, but you're right. You know, we're a heating season and it fits in more with the neighborhood. And a light color really shows damage and shows age so much faster, especially white shingles. We used to always put on white shingles, but every, you know, you put them on a hot day and all these scuff marks are up there that shows every hail damage mark. They get discolored, you know. So it comes down to a taste. But if you go with the metal roof and it's put on correctly, it isn't going to affect, if it's insulated right, it isn't really going to affect the temperature that much. And there you can go to the Forest Products Lab, and there's some really good articles on attic temperatures and shingle colors.
All right.
And they've done the testing on it.
Let's do a couple email questions here, and then we'll get back to the phones after our break. I don't want to shortchange anybody on the phones. Here's a question from Larry in Cedar Falls. Is it possible to convert a gas-powered, pilot-lighted fireplace to an electronic ignition?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not qualified to say. I would get a hold of a plumber or go to a fireplace store, wherever you're going to buy that. I'm not a big fan of either one anyway in a good home.
All right, because you're concerned about air quality.
Yeah, I'm concerned about air quality.
All right.
And especially when you take and you're changing something. That, you know, your health and your safety are pretty high on the needs list, and transferring something like that, I don't know, it just seems a little scary.
All right, this one's from Earl. After rains, I have rainwater around much of the perimeter of the inside of the building. My walls are unfinished, so I can check to see if water is running down the walls, and it doesn't appear to be. Any idea where the leak is originating? Would it be where the wall panels overlap, or maybe the sill plate?
So it's Oh, so he's talking like on the first floor. Yeah, it's you've got a flashing issue, flashing detail issue probably, if they're not finished right. If there's water coming in now, it's going to be even worse because it's going to get trapped next time and start a lot of decay. What you need to do is make sure that on the outside, whatever house wrap, which is required by code, is lapped correctly, like shingle style. The top one goes over the bottom one. And the windows have flashing, which means flashing is either an adhesive membrane or metal, and you usually have to finish everything off with an adhesive membrane. That is flashed correctly. Pull out the design of the brand of windows and then go to their website and then pull up the detail on how that was supposed to be put on. They're basically all the same. But who's ever building it, you're doing it yourself, be sure and look at that. Because if you're like me, if you're putting in the windows like we did in the 70s, they're going in wrong, and you're going to have moisture issues. And I was just at a new house a couple weeks ago, and the OSB is pretty much gone on the outside. The exterior sheeting's like mush.
Oh, ouch. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's cool, but...
we're gonna take a short break. If it's not your house, maybe.
That's right.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today, and you can ask your questions of Bill at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up, we've got Wayne on the line in Albernett. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, this is Wayne.
Hi, what's your question?
We have a 119-year-old home, and we're looking at putting a two-story addition on it so my wife and I can live out our days. And on one level eventually.
Okay.
We have a friend down the street who's a building inspector. When we were trying to figure out what to do for contractors, we live in rural Iowa, about 4 miles outside of the little town, in a small 20-house community. And he suggested if we could possibly find a contractor locally, we would save a bunch of bucks because of the travel time involved. And I wondered what you guys thought about that.
You know, usually that's true. But it also depends on how much they can get their materials for, the out-of-towners and how busy they need to be to keep their crew on. In Fort Dodge, we have some builders from Des Moines coming up and building, and they're building right alongside, local builders. And I don't really know why they came up, but they must have, to make money, they must have come up because they're competitively priced with everybody else. The other good thing about buying local is the materials, stay there, the taxes stay there. But the other good thing is if you get somebody local, if there's an issue, usually you can go get them to bring them over to show them, hey, let's get this taken care of. It always made me nervous is when you had to have somebody come in, say, from 100 miles away. How are you going to find them? You had to put on a black hat, basically, and say, I'm just going to show up in your driveway if you're not going to come up here and take care of this. So you need to. That's a really nice thing about keeping it local. And then usually a local contractor will hire local subcontractors, and there again, they will be able to pass on some savings, and then they can help you make maybe some decisions about what really works in your area. Just as a for instance, local contractors usually know what the soil types are because they work maybe in that 20 home addition you're in right there. And they may know, we may run into this where someone, like a soil issue, it's got too much clay or it's got expansive soils or something like that. I know what this is like around here, and I know the foundation or I've worked on maybe that house this 119-year-old house before, houses like it in our area. I know what kind of mortar they used in their foundation. Those are just little incidentals that a local person has above someone from a longer, distance away. And, you know, the way things, the way you can purchase even you know, from local lumber yards, everything is pretty much competitive anymore. But, you know, I would stick with, you know, somebody local. And it's, you know, it's kind of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, fine, go ahead.
And it's really nice that you've got a building inspector there, too, or close by, because, you know, they really, you know, sometimes building inspectors get a bad rap. They're in the business because vast majority of them are in the business because they want to help people. And so they'll always, you know, be, you know, I'll maybe come stop by every couple of days just to take a look. And that's always a nice thing, too, when you say, hey, you know, the inspector's coming by today. things seem to end up a lot better in some cases. So that's also a good positive.
Real quickly, we also have our design pretty well made, except for structural stuff. And one guy suggested that we use a lumber yard. Another one, there's a place that does fitted trusses and everything. Mm-hmm. And they decided, and we're trying to figure out, we just have to figure out some of the structural stuff, supporting walls and what.
Sure.
Because we'll have to take off some. And what's your get on that real quick, and then I'll let the other people get in there.
Well, the lumber yard that in my area that we use, you know, they have people on staff that can do that structural, and then if they buy the materials, like say laminated beams or cross laminated timbers or anything structural, when they buy it from that company, then they get an opinion. They see the plans, and then they will tell you, okay, this is what you need to have underneath this beam. You know, how many trimmer boards need to be there to hold up this beam at this depth and this distance of span. And so a lot of lumber yards have that service. But if it's kind of a unique design, you may have to go to a structural engineer or an architect. Just ask, do you guys have a designer on staff? And a lot of them do. The guys that I work with in Fort Dodge, they're phenomenal.
All right. Well, Wayne, good luck. Thanks a lot for your call. Next, let's go to David in Des Moines. Hi, David.
Hello. We've been trying to do a lot of stuff to go green, like a rain barrel and compost and whatnot. I was curious if you had any experience with solar panels or comments about those.
I really like solar panels. I'm like everybody else. Since the 70s, we've been told the price is going to come down. It's going to come down. You know, I don't know if it'll ever come down far enough for me. But they're to the point that if, you know, the thing is, any renewable energy, I always feel if you're going to use renewable energy, you'd better get what you're producing the energy for. Get that done first, and then you do the renewable. So, you know, the ideas behind, you know, and the term green is, you make the house or the project, you know, let's just say the house, you make that as efficient as you possibly can, and then you get the solar to match what the electrical need is for that, because a lot of times people will have a very inefficient house, a ton of electrical use, a lot of waste, a lot of phantom usage, and they try not to cut that down because they think, well, we'll just go ahead and put up some panels. Well, they're, you know, the panels are great, and they really are. It's just that you still have to buy more of them, and a lot of times you know, we don't know how things are going to go with the legislature down the road. It may be at a time where you will not be able to tie into the grid and use basically their lines as a battery. You may have to provide all that battery storage yourself, and that's usually where, you know, you have line loss from the panels to the inverter and the batteries and all that. That's where a lot of the money is generated, and the technology is changing so fast. You know, especially with batteries, you know, with Elon Musk involved, you know, you never know, tomorrow he might come up with a battery that just outpace anything that's made right now. We just don't know. But I really like solar. I really do. And I like them on the ground. So that you can wipe the snow off of them and you can keep them clean to keep their efficiency up. I don't like them on a roof poking holes through my roof, and I want to be able to keep them clean. And I and And you get a good designer and someone that can help you. There's a lot of them in Iowa, and I think you'd be very happy. The last project I looked at, it was only going to be about $15,000 after we were all done. But there again, it's a catch-22. You put $15,000 in it, but yet you've built such an efficient home that you don't use much electricity, and now do I really need the solar? You know, it's a quandary.
But efficiency first, and you
efficiency
like solar panels.
Right, efficiency okay. Indoor air quality, safety first, then go with the solar. But I really do like solar. I wish we could kind of get it more of a hydrogen for generating power. That's now you got my personal ideas on that.
But well, that's what he wanted. So
yeah, there you
yeah,
go, David.
Thanks a lot for your call. All right, Bill is up next in North Liberty. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi. Bill.
Yep. Thanks for taking the call, and we always enjoy your program. So keep up the good work.
Thank you. He's a great American. I could tell already.
So I need a little advice to track down a leak. This is on a metal roof. The roof is probably about 30 years old, and it's been nailed on, and I've primed and caulked all the nail heads, so to speak, so I don't think it's coming through a nail. And I'm thinking on the ridge vent, there's a vent on the ridge, if you would, and then like a gutter, and in the base of that gutter, there's some small holes. And I'm thinking that when we get a heavy rain, that those holes are not adequate to drain the rainwater, and it's backing up through the vent on the ridge vent and coming in that way.
You know,
have any ideas of where to start looking for such of a problem?
That's exact. You know, now that you describe that, I can see that happening very easy. And the other issue is on ridges is when we get a lot of rain, you know, the wind. The ridge vents are designed so that when air goes across them, it draws air up, you know, from the attic. But it's also as it tumbles across the top, that venturi effect that's going on, that air's tumbling over the top, it can also suck the air out of that gutter and pull it in into that vent. It could go both ways. And so, you know, before that water can go through the little holes, you know, to drain over the metal roof, that it's getting sucked in, and you know, with the metal roofing, is probably 2 inches apart at the peak, and it may get in sucked in there. So what may have happened is that ridge, a lot of times that ridge had a kind of a foam or a fabric or sometimes a steel mesh on the inside to keep you know, bugs, bees, you know, snow from blowing in, and so maybe some of that is gone. Maybe some of birds have picked it away, and that happens a lot. The birds, sparrows will crawl up there and pull that out and use it in a nest, and you've got an open hole going in to the ridge. I would look at that.
So you think that
that could easily be what it is, you know, because
just assume there was a foam in there. That would be hard to see.
Yes, it is. And
is the solution kind of to take off the vent and just put a new one on?
Yeah, I'd pull one off, one section of it off, and take a look at it. Can you get in the attic and look out from the inside?
No.
Oh, nuts.
Can't see it from the inside.
Yeah.
The finished ceiling.
Then I would pull one section off and take a look at it, because 30 years is a long time if that's the original ridge. We had some really bad designs back then. I mean, we really did. But I'm thinking that may be because if you've gone over all the nails, because I was going to say, okay, the washers have dried out, you know, on the nails.
Yeah.
No, I think that'd be my goal. I think you're right.
So that's the number one place to start looking.
Yeah, that and or drill the holes out bigger so the water goes faster. But I think a lot of it might be just getting sucked in because of wind.
So your point that we do get I'll call it a negative when the wind blows over. It can either blow the rain in from the positive force of the wind, but it also suck it in like a venturi on the downwind side.
It's exactly right. Yeah, that's that building science kicking in. Yep. You know, and a really cool story. Sorry, Charity, but there's one really cool story somewhere here in Iowa, and I wish I had the picture of it.
I love a cool story.
Is the wind was so strong, and this one storm that sucked the brick off the backside of a house.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because, yeah, as that wind went over the house, it created a suction on the back side of the house and sucked the brick, you know, the brick wall, because all the brick attachments had rotted out and gravity was holding it there and just clump right out in the yard.
That's so many cool. of your cool stories make me sick to my stomach, Bill. That's great. Bill, thanks so much for your call.
Thanks, Bill.
Here's a question from Claudia. I love the idea of a conservatory. It's like a greenhouse, an all-glass structure, but usually attached directly to a main house. They're common in homes in the UK and in Europe. Yep. I see many ideas on social media sites for these conservatories, but they're usually from UK sources. Do you think that would translate to a home in Iowa? I don't see many here and wonder if sometimes our extreme inclement weather is an issue.
I don't think it's the weather, because we have three seasons porches and that. When we were talking about sites and that earlier, go to Lunchbox Architect is what it's called. And that's most of that is out of Australia, New Zealand, but they basically have same building styles. But go to that and you will see a lot of, if you really start searching on, you find some conservatories. But also it's called home building and renovation. That's based in the UK. And go to that one, and it might take you a couple clicks to get that one. But that has a lot of areas like atriums and conservatories. And, I watched a movie the other day, it was the Winchester House. It was a movie about the Winchester House, San Francisco. Huge conservatory on the outside, kind of a greenhouse deal. And I've started thinking the same thing. Why don't we have more of those?
All right, so Claudia can make her dream come true.
There you go. Yeah, that'll be neat. That'll be really neat.
All right. And final call today, Jim is on the line in Fort Dodge. Hi, Jim.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Hey, I'm wondering about Bill's opinion on mudjacking to address settlement issues with driveways and porch steps.
Yeah, I like it. Yep, I like it. I wish everybody would just put, clean rock underneath it. And,
right,
and
tell me what mudjacking is.
Mudjacking is when they inject like a cement or a gypsum type of a slurry. Some use a foam, but I like the mudjacking. They just call it mudjacking. But they'll inject basically a slurry, like it looks like a concrete mix, a very thin concrete mix, under pressure, and it actually raises the sidewalk up to where it may have settled. The downside is you raise it, but maybe next year when the frost gets in or the water gets in where it shouldn't be because it was put in wrong, okay, now it's going to raise up that much more and you might end up grinding. But try it out first. And worst case scenario is you would take it out and put at least 4 inches of clean rock underneath wherever your driveway or that is. The extreme cases, mudjacking is used all over the world. But when you see these huge old harvester silos, when they would get a little bit tipped over, the foundation would settle. They come in with huge commercial ones, and they can actually lift the whole foundation up and straighten the silos back up. So, I really like them. There's a couple of guys in Fort Dodge do that. So,
well, that's good news for you, Jim.
I think it's really neat myself. But
all right.
But it's
so,
actually
thumbs up.
But you're just fixing an error is what you're doing.
All right. But it's nice to be able
it's
to
corrective.
Fix it.
That's right.
All right. Bill, we are out of time. Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jerdy.
You can get
Have
back
a fun
to
week.
Pinterest now.
Yes, I will. Get back to my minion memes.
All right. Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert. He drops by once a month or so to share home improvement ideas with us. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Caitlin Harrop, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Stephanie Nobringa. And you can listen to Talk of Iowa anytime. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Talk of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.